Hey, podcast listeners, it's Joe Pastor, the producer. Are you a fan of our podcast? Well, here's a chance to be part of one of our episodes. We have a podcast episode currently in the works where we plan to delve into process safety professionals' personal stories about why they are passionate about process safety, and we'd love to hear from you. So we want to know, why is process safety important to you? Did learning about a major industry incident impact how you felt about process safety? Or did you or someone you know have a firsthand encounter with a catastrophic event or even a near miss? So what can you do if you'd like to contribute to the episode? You can send us your thoughts via email and we will read them during the episode. Or you can record a short voice message using your phone and send it to podcast@amplifyconsultants.com. We look forward to hearing from you. Thanks and hope you enjoy this week's episode.
Welcome to Amplify Your Process Safety, the podcast that provides the experience and expertise you need when it comes to process safety and risk management. Our hands-on approach will give you the insight needed, whether you're new to industry or process safety, in a role where you interact with aspects of process safety, or an experienced process safety professional. Join us in our mission to protect people, the companies they work for, and the communities where they operate by making process safety knowledge available to all.
Hello, podcast listeners, and welcome back to the Amplify Your Process Safety podcast. My name is Joe, and today I'm joined by Rob for another incident breakdown episode. So what are we talking about today, Rob?
Hi, Joe. In today's episode, we're going to be discussing an investigation report that was issued by the Chemical Safety Board about a trichloroisocyanuric acid, which is also known as TCCA, which is much easier to pronounce. So the report was about a TCCA reaction, decomposition, and toxic gas release that happened at a facility in Westlake, Louisiana, that is owned by a company called BioLab Inc. This investigation happened in August 2020, and the CSB just released the report. We are recording on May 2nd, 2023, and the report was released in its final form last week on April 24th. So, Joe, what is some of the background of the release?
Sure. So, as you mentioned, the facility that had this incident with the TCCA is called BioLab Inc. They're part of a KIK Custom Products subsidiary, and they manufacture chemicals for pools and spas. So they are dealing with a lot of chlorine type products. The one in particular, the TCCA, we'll talk about a little bit further on in this episode, but it was not a good mix with Hurricane Laura. So back to some background, the facility was built in the late 1970s. It's near Lake Charles, Louisiana. And at the time of the incident, they had 111 employees. So on August 27th, there were some extreme winds coming from Hurricane Laura, which at that time was a Category 4 hurricane. And of course, it caused severe damage to the buildings that were storing this TCCA. Now, this, like I mentioned before, is a substance that's used as a sanitizer. It can kill algae, bacteria for swimming pools, hot tubs. In the report, it says that they sell this in tablet, stick, and granular forms. And so, of course, it's meant to be used in water, but in a large amount of water. And so the issue in this case is that if it comes into contact with a small amount of water and doesn't dissolve, it undergoes a chemical reaction, which generates heat, and it causes decomposition of the material. So this can produce explosive nitrogen trichloride. So that's exactly what happened in this case. Some rainwater got inside the buildings that were storing this TCCA, and it initiated this chemical reaction and decomposition. And so heat was produced, a fire broke out. You know, there's a large amount of hazardous gases, including toxic chlorine being released into the air. The gases, you know, crossed outside of the facility itself. You could see it over the nearby community. So really large event here. Some of the aftermath, it destroyed a production building there and it caused damage to some other buildings in the area. And it closed down an interstate, Interstate 10, for over 28 hours.
Wow, and that's a big event to close down an interstate for 28 hours.
Sure. Yep. And of course, because of the gases that were released, a shelter in place order had to be put into place. And then as far as money goes, there was $250 million invested in having to redesign and restructure all of the parts of the facility that got damaged. So pretty significant. And the facility didn't even resume operations until this March of 2023. So it was down for a while. Now, fortunately, there were no injuries, but, you know, just not a great day overall across many metrics for this facility. Now, what we like about the CSB reports is they go really in depth about contributing factors, and we think it's really valuable to learn what was going on at the time, you know, what contributed here, what can we learn from it and teach other facilities about so that they can avoid this. So there is a section of the report that we invite you to go read, and we will link to it, of course, all about the safety issues that contributed to this explosion. So we are going to be covering those in this episode, and we're going to kick it off with the first safety issue. So what was the first safety issue that the CSB found, Rob?
So the first place where they focused was on the fact that this was happening in the middle of a large hurricane. I mean, a Category 4 hurricane, Hurricane Laura, very significant. And I guess that it's a little bit, obviously it's unfortunate, but it's a little bit disheartening, because this incident happened about, 3 years after Hurricane Harvey hit the Arkema facility in Crosby, Texas in 2017, and caused kind of similar sorts of issues. And there was less of a fire issue, but certainly more of a decomposition and a toxic release issue. But still, BioLab did not learn the importance of preparing for extreme weather events, even though they're right in Hurricane Alley. I mean, you know, you've got to expect in that area that you're going to have severe hurricanes hit at some sort of frequency. And unfortunately, based on what the report said, it sounds like they did some preparation, but they did not complete all their preparations. And obviously, their preparations weren't adequate to prevent this, at least looking at the hazards of the material, this kind of predictable event from happening. And one thing, just to go off again what you said, Joe, we're really basing all of our information here on what the CSB has reported. So we have no idea how accurate it is. We assume it's accurate, and we, you know, are in no way saying anything about BioLab. We're just talking about what we're seeing in the report. So yeah, extreme weather preparation is important, and it does appear as though BioLab did not complete all of their preparation as would have been prudent. And what was the next one, Joe?
Right. And I just want to circle back to one thing that is interesting in the report. And of course, like I said, we invite you to go read it in its entirety. But like Rob mentioned, they did some prep and they did have a hurricane plan, which is good. You know, so they were aware that they were in an area that could experience hurricanes because, of course, they're located in the Gulf Coast. And so what's interesting in the report is it says as part of their prep, they transported about 825,000 pounds of TCCA from the warehouse here at this BioLab facility that we're talking about over to Georgia. So that's good. They were able to transport a lot of it out. However, they had two scheduled trucks that never came to finish the transport. And so there were still over 1 million pounds on site as the hurricane approached. So it's kind of like they got half of it, almost half of it off site, but, you know, half of a plan was not going to be enough to prevent the, you know, something terrible from happening. And then they did also evacuate the facility, but there are some issues that are, you know, tied to that as well, because they did eventually lose electricity and things like that, that we'll touch on a little bit further down in this line of safety issues that we're covering. So the next cause that we'll cover from the report is the process hazard analysis, PHA implementation. So a PHA, of course, is done to evaluate the hazards, make sure you've got adequate safeguards in place. If not, recommendations are made so that you can be sure that you do have safeguards in place. So in BioLab's 2010 PHA, they did have a recommendation for this facility to, quote, consider evaluating warehouse roof structures for hurricane conditions, verify warehouse is built to withstand high winds. Pretty important, right? Would have probably been covered under some sort of checklist for extreme weather hazards, things like that, that were applicable to their area. Now, it looks like the CSB's investigation found that the company did not end up implementing this recommendation, at least they hadn't at the time of this event. So if they had implemented that recommendation, you know, they could have identified that those buildings were not going to be able to withstand hurricane strength winds, and they may have been able to keep the TCCA from being exposed to the rainwater. So that could have prevented the incident. So a lack of closeout of those recommendations shows that, you know, they had some issues with their action item management and also, you know, ended up contributing to this event.
Absolutely. So the next thing on the list was emergency preparedness and response. Obviously, if you have some sort of an issue where you've got decomposition going on and fire developing, the sooner you can jump on that from an emergency response plan standpoint, the better. And it appears as though there were some delays in the response to this TCCA decomposition, mainly due to the fact that there was inadequate and largely non-functional fire protection system. And also, they didn't have any automatic sprinklers. So, you know, that's a big deal. Here at Amplify, we do a lot of PHAs. And a lot of people, you know, rely on their automatic sprinkler systems to make sure that fires are put out relatively quickly so that we can minimize damage and also minimize knock-on effects, domino effects, etc. And it appears as though they did not do that. So they mentioned there was approximately a 5.5 hour delay in the response that, you know, essentially led to the decomposition to then cause more chlorine release and then more fire, et cetera, et cetera. So again, time is not your friend in this sort of a situation. Having a good emergency preparedness plan is great, but also having the infrastructure in place to make sure that you're doing everything you can, that if something happens, it's going to be addressed quickly and not let these problems linger. That's super important. And also there was a, apparently there was they rented a backup generator, which probably was part of their emergency response plan or their hurricane preparedness plan. They rented the backup generator and apparently staff did not know how to use it, which must have been very frustrating and obviously led to this incident continuing longer than it needed to. So emergency response was our preparedness and response, as they say in the report, was lacking here. What do we got next, Joe?
Yep. So next is adherence to applicable hazardous material codes. So this facility did not conform to some of the safeguards in NFPA 101 life safety code for high hazard industrial occupancies. So this kind of goes back to what you said before. It would have required automatic extinguishing systems or something else to protect and minimize danger to occupants before they have time to evacuate. It also didn't conform to NFPA 400 hazardous materials code, which deals with fire detection and an automatic fire sprinkler system. And these things would have been required if the structure had been built or remodeled after 2017. But because this facility was built in 1979, it was grandfathered. And so it did not have to make those updates, but they certainly would have been really important to keep in mind considering what they were handling. And so, like you mentioned before, had they had these systems to automatically extinguish fires, you know, they would have been putting large amounts of water on this TCCA to stop this decomposition. And so it likely would have been a much more insignificant event. So that it was another safety issue that the CSB found.
Well, before we move on to the next one, I just want to make a comment. The issue with Louisiana State Code and their adoption of NFPA, the report says that Louisiana did not require that companies follow these codes unless they were built or remodeled after July 1st, 2017. So that means at least one of my takeaways from that is that we have a heck of a lot of facilities in Louisiana that are not required to follow these, because that was 5 years ago, and obviously almost 6 years ago, I guess. And obviously there's a lot of chemical infrastructure in Louisiana. So if I were in a facility down there, I would be considering whether or not it might be worthwhile to comply with this, even if I may not have to per federal or state requirements.
That's kind of a recurring theme that we've seen in a lot of these incidents, whether it's the facility itself with these standards, or sometimes it's vessels. You know, the codes have changed since that vessel was first put into service, but they didn't have to go back and retrofit it. But it's not a bad idea to consider it and, you know, weigh the pros and cons of, you know, what is it going to cost to shut down and replace it and things like that versus what could potentially happen if you don't. So something that we see a lot in these CSB investigations.
We do. And, you know, consider this facility spent $250 million rebuilding their plant. I don't know what went into that number, but that may not even include impact to business and stuff like that. So obviously, although these are black swan events, they are low likelihood, but very high severity and very high consequence events. So sometimes it's worth it to go a little bit above and beyond what your state or the feds are requiring you to do. So the next one was regulatory coverage of reactive chemical hazards. This one plays right into our wheelhouse. Essentially, the CSB is pointing out that TCCA, although it can decompose and release chlorine gas, as well as apparently start fires, it is not regulated under PSM and is also not regulated under EPA's risk management program. So therefore, BioLab didn't need to have any of these, any programs from that in place related to management of change, emergency response, having a full PHA. Going back to Joe, the point you made about a PHA, identifying the roof support, there's a recommendation that was from a PHA in 2010. So I don't know if I don't know whether they didn't do a PHA between 2010 and the incident, or whether that just happened to come from the PHA in 2010. But there's limited requirements to do things like that for facilities that aren't covered by PSM and RMP. And the CSB basically, you know, points out that OSHA and EPA are not adequately considering reactive chemistry and reactive chemical hazards in developing their lists. Both of these programs, we expect them to change relatively soon. I'm not sure what those changes will be. It's possible that it will pull in some of these chemicals, but it's also possible that it won't. And this regulatory coverage gap related to reactive chemicals and their hazards points to a weakness in relying on chemical lists to determine regulatory coverage, obviously contributed to this incident and also contributes to other chemical reactive hazard incidents that we've had over the last 30 years. And one of the things that I want to point out here, though, is that one area where folks don't have as much visibility related to, let's say, process safety management or process safety systems that are not PSM or are not RMP, is that the Clean Air Act amendments of 1990, which is where the RMP program comes from, also includes something called the General Duty Clause. And that General Duty Clause, as opposed to OSHA's General Duty Clause, which is very much, you know, which is basically says it's the employer's responsibility to maintain a safe workplace. The General Duty Clause that EPA has actually gives them the ability to go into facilities that are not covered by RMP if they handle hazardous substances, and there's no definition of what hazardous substances are, or I think they call them extremely hazardous substances, and there are no thresholds. So even though you may not be covered by PSM or RMP, that doesn't mean that from a federal regulatory standpoint that you don't need to do anything related to process safety. The General Duty Clause, while not being as rigorous as RMP or even PSM, certainly, it does have certain requirements like making sure you maintain your equipment, making sure that you've got emergency response, making sure that you have some sort of hazard analysis. So we've talked about this in other podcasts. If you don't know anything about it and want to learn more, go to our website, to the podcast page, type General Duty Clause, and you'll come up with a couple. But this is something that EPA has not done a lot of enforcement actions on, although we do have some clients that have been caught up in that. And if BioLab had done some sort of a General Duty Clause program, even though not as rigorous as PSM or RMP, I think it probably would have impacted the severity of this incident. So anyway, I'll get down off my soapbox and just say that TCCA wasn't covered under PSM or RMP, and that seems to have contributed to this incident.
But it's kind of wild, like you said, that they didn't have to comply with these just because they weren't on a list, because clearly they had on-site and off-site consequences that were very possible and very extreme. So I think, like you said, GDC is trying to kind of bridge the gap between what's currently lacking in the regulation and then what, you know, really should have a program in place. So that's a good point to make. Okay, so that is the end of our list from the CSB's report on safety issues that contributed to the event. But now we want to talk big picture and talk about the types of companies that could be at risk from incidents such as these. So there's a few groups here. The first group is going to be facilities that have materials that require electricity to stay in a stable state and not decompose. So for example, anything that requires refrigeration. And this is a great example of what happened with Crosby, Arkema Crosby, with Hurricane Harvey. So we'll link at the end to that episode because it's a good one to check out. Or in this case, you know, if you've got a process that has materials that can't be exposed to water, so rain, these are going to be really important to keep in mind when it comes to natural hazards, because of course, rain and loss of electricity come with a lot of natural hazards. And so really important to keep in mind, again, even if you are not required to follow PSM or RMP requirements, if you've got something that can decompose at your facility, really important to sit down and do an adequate hazard assessment there. Make sure you've got everything in place to make sure that it stays at a nice, happy state and does not decompose.
Just like with the Hurricane Harvey incident, any facility which is in a hurricane zone should be learning from this. Obviously, there's very direct things. Oh, those are the things that, you know, those are the things that went wrong. Could something like that happen here? So it's very direct. But also facilities that are in other sorts of areas that have natural hazards like wildfires or earthquakes or anything like that, you know, blizzards, tornadoes. I mean, obviously, there's a limited amount of stuff you can do for tornadoes. But at least consider it and take a look to see if there are things that you can do in the event of any one of these extreme weather conditions or natural hazards that you could prepare for and make sure that your process is in a safe state. That's not just the process of manufacturing. That's also the storage of raw materials and the storage of product as well. And the last thing is that facilities who do not qualify or are not required to follow PSM or RMP, as I said, if you have hazardous materials, even though you're below the threshold for both of those programs, you should consider whether or not general duty clause applies to you. And if it does, then we highly recommend that you do the requirements, the required systems updates, upgrades that EPA requires for GDC compliance. I think the last thing is that, you know, you got to think worst case for natural hazards. What's the worst case that can happen? And there's a certain amount of realistic thinking you have to put into that. Is it realistic that a facility in Houston is going to have 3 feet of snow? Probably not. Is it realistic that a facility in northern New England, where I live, is going to have a tornado? That's probably not our highest risk natural hazard. Know what your natural hazards are and make sure that you're adequately thinking through what those worst cases are. Anything else, Joe?
Yeah, just to add on to that, we've got a great podcast episode in our library already that kind of talks about this, and it's based off of the CCPS monograph called Assessment of and Planning for Natural Hazards. So we'll link to that below, but we invite you to check it out. It's episode 26. It's got a lot of great resources linked to it. It's got some animation from the CSB for Arkema Crosby. It's got some stuff about the Fukushima disaster. So lots of good information to kind of get you started on thinking about natural hazards for your facility.
I think that's it. We, again, highly recommend that you take a look at this. However, we know that not everybody's going to go in and take the time to read through the report, which is why we do these podcasts based on those CSB reports. CSB has great resources for learning more about how to prevent this sort of incident from happening at your facility. So highly recommend you take a look at that. If you have a comment about this week's episode or an idea for a future episode, anything like that, we'd love to hear from you. You can always send us a voice message using the link in our episode description. Or you can always send an email to podcast@amplifyconsultants.com.
And we, of course, have covered lots of other CSB final investigation reports for you. So feel free to go to our website on the podcast page and use the search tool to search for incident breakdown to find all of those other episodes where we cover different incidents that the CSB has put out reports for. And you can expect a lot more will be coming because we've seen the CSB projection of how they'll be wrapping up all of their ongoing investigations that are currently in the works. And it sounds like they will have lots of reports for us here in the next month or two because of their schedule to get so many out by midway through the year. So expect more to come.
All right. And finally, it's our goal at Amplify Process Safety to save lives by partnering with companies that handle highly hazardous chemicals to create world-class process safety systems, as it's our belief that these systems will help to prevent catastrophic incidents like the one we talked about today, and other ways to get fires and explosions and toxic releases, or sometimes all of those together. Please don't hesitate to reach out to us if we can help guide you on your process safety journey. And Joe, thank you for helping me out here. And thank you, audience, for listening. And until next time, be safe out there.
We appreciate you joining us for this episode of Amplify Your Process Safety. Head to our website, amplifyconsultants.com, to find our show notes and other resources. Thank you for joining us in our mission to ultimately save lives by advancing process safety right here on Amplify Your Process Safety. Until next time.